Coming up on this episode of A Little Advice, I'll be diving deep into a treatment for depression a lot of people have never heard of, TMS. We're going to talk about what it is, how it works, and I'll be discussing all of this with the president of the TMS Society and the founder of SoCal TMS, one of the leading providers of TMS treatment in the country, Dr. Todd Hutton. Welcome back to another episode of A Little Advice Podcast, a podcast for funny creatives who want to feel inspired and motivated. This is Christine Little, comedian, life coach, fake therapist. I am at the XTeen Little across all social media. And if you're interested in doing a life coaching session with me, drop me a line at A Little Advice Podcast on Instagram. This is season number 3, episode 40, the first episode of the season, and this is a good one. It deals a lot with depression, something a lot of us, including myself, are familiar with, especially during this time. So if you're someone who has struggled with depression and nothing has worked for you, TMS might be it. This might be your thing that you haven't heard about yet, because I just heard about it. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Have you tried TMS? Would you? And the best way to do that, to hear your thoughts, would be to send me a message on at A Little Advice Podcast on Instagram. Now, I hope you enjoy this episode. Oh, Dr. Hutton?
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for coming on and doing my podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
I'm very excited to have you on here. So before I start grilling you about stuff, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Okay. Well, I am a psychiatrist that specializes in a treatment called transcranial magnetic stimulation. Been doing this for a bit over 10 years now. I started out just as a sort of regular general psychiatrist and became interested in this when it first became available after it was approved by the FDA. And transcranial magnetic stimulation is known as TMS. And it's currently FDA approved for the treatment of major depression, as well as for the treatment of obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah.
Although its primary use in the US right now has been for depression, because that's where good insurance coverage has been. But it represents a really different way of treating the brain.
Okay, yeah, like, so what is it exactly? Like, how would you describe it just to a person, maybe like a 5-year-old?
One of my favorite ways of describing it is wireless charging for the brain.
Hmm.
Okay, so I'll break down the name here. Transcranial means going across your cranium or going across your skull. Magnetic means that we're using magnetic energy as opposed, maybe, say, to electrical energy.
Mm-hmm.
And stimulation means that we're delivering stimulation. We're actually getting the brain to fire. Now, the reason I call it wireless charging for the brain is it works on the same principles that wireless charging works on. So a lot of people may have a cell phone that can wirelessly charge, or they may have other devices like their Apple Watch that wirelessly charges, or even your electric toothbrush. You might put your electric toothbrush in a plastic base, mm-hmm. and it may have a plastic handle. And people may never wonder, how does that battery get charged when it's just plastic on plastic? It's not metal connection to metal. There's no actually direct current.
Yeah.
Well, the way that works is the little base inside the charger creates a tiny magnetic pulse. Magnetic pulses go right through things without any resistance like you get with electricity. It goes right through plastic. It can go right through your iPhone case. And Electricity and magnetism are actually kind of two sides of the same coin, and you can turn electricity into a magnetic energy, and you can turn magnetic energy into electrical energy. And that's how the wireless charger works. It takes the electrical energy out of your socket, makes a magnetic pulse. It goes, the magnetic pulse goes across your phone case and gets turned back into electrical energy inside the battery.
What? So could you use a cell phone charger to charge your brain?
No, it's not nearly powerful enough to deliver the kind of stimulation that we're needing to actually fire your brain. But it's the same principle. So magnetic pulses can go right through your skull. And the neurons in your brain, the nerve cells in your brain, are actually a lot like wires. They run on electrical energy. And they pick up that magnetic pulse. And inside those neurons, the magnetic energy gets converted, just like they do in wires and in batteries, gets converted back into electrical energy. And it's enough electrical energy that it actually fires the neurons in your brain. So this kind of started, back in 85 when a British biomedical engineer developed magnets, and he found that he could put them on people's nerves and get their nerves to fire, and you could put them over people's brains and get people's brains to fire, and they could make their legs move, their arms move by stimulating the right spot. And then there was an American psychiatrist who was studying in England who saw these machines in the night, like around 1990. And he understood an observation that we'd had for a while, that in patients with depression, parts of their brain were underactive, typically in the left frontal lobe. But it was a very common finding. We didn't know what to do with it or what it meant. We did know that shock therapy helped people with depression. And in shock therapy, you actually deliver electrical current across the brain, which would hurt if you're awake.
They have to go in your brain to do that, since it's not.
No, they put electrodes on your brain and they put you asleep.
Wow.
When people get shock therapy, or what's called electroconvulsive therapy, which is still used, we put people asleep for about 5 minutes, give them a split second of electricity, and that actually triggers a seizure in their brain, and that gets their brain to fire in a big way. And for reasons that weren't well understood when it was first discovered, it seemed to help people get over depression.
Wow.
So this American guy named Mark George said, well, gee, I wonder if we could use these magnets instead of using electricity to stimulate people's brains. And if we could maybe get the brain to fire, would it be like kind of like exercising these underactive areas? And could we get these underactive areas to become active the way they were before, to become active like normal? And they studied this for a long time. And sure enough, they found if you gave enough pulses to people, you could make these underactive areas of the brain become active again. And they could demonstrate that on sophisticated MRIs that show how much your brain is firing, how much your brain is functioning, how much sugar it's burning, how much oxygen it's using. And they developed this into a technique to treat depression. And so now typically what we do is patients will come to a clinic generally 5 days a week. They'll sit under one of these magnets, maybe for 20, 30 minutes, get several thousand of these magnetic pulses while they're awake, while they may be watching TV. It fires these underactive parts of the brain. And I tell people it's like exercising this part of your brain. And when you exercise a muscle, what does it do? It responds to the fact it's being used more. It actually gets bigger. It releases growth factors when you use a muscle more, and that actually what makes your muscle bigger. Well, we've been able to show that when we stimulate these parts of the brain with TMS, with these magnetic pulses, and we actually fire your brain, it too releases growth factors. There's a thing called
Oh.
BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic growth factor gets released. They've been able to show that these areas of the brain actually get bigger. They actually grow. They actually form new connections between the nerve cells. They actually start becoming more metabolically active. They can demonstrate that there's more blood flow to these parts of the brain, and they start functioning normally. It
Does that
takes a
happen with electroshock therapy as well, or is this kind of TMS specific?
It's believed that this is also what happens with electroshock therapy, and the difference is that sort of an electroshock therapy, we sort of take this sort of shotgun approach to the brain, and we give the whole brain a seizure. And a seizure gives you a lot of sort of this cascade of firing in the brain, this kind of chain reaction. And your whole brain fires, not just the mood parts of your brain. And one of the downsides to shock therapy or ECT is that it also fires parts of the brain that really don't need to be fired, and it kind of like erases your short-term memory banks for that day.
That sounds horrifying.
And so there's some definite side effects with shock therapy that, or ECT, I should say ECT, that's actually the correct name for it, that we don't have with TMS. With TMS, we don't actually cause a seizure. With TMS, we only send these pulses to a relatively small area of your brain that's on the outer edge that we know is a mood area, and we don't affect other parts of your brain. It's why you can have the treatment while you're awake. It's why you
So it doesn't hurt.
it well, you might have interesting. You might be some discomfort. Now, you won't have any memory loss. There's a tiny risk of it causing a seizure. Like one seizure in like 50,000 treatments. It's extremely rare. It only happens like during the treatment. There can be some discomfort, and you say, well, how do you feel a magnetic pulse? And you actually don't feel the magnetic pulse, but the magnetic pulse fires every nerve cell it travels across, and it actually fires the nerves in your skin as well as the nerves in your brain. And then some of the nerves in your skin have to do with sensation and touch, and those get fired as well. And so you experience this feeling like something's tapping on your head. Patients describe it as feeling like there's this woodpecker on their head.
So let me just get this straight. So there's a big magnet that you put on like a part of someone's head that and that shoots pulses into that specific area. Is that right? So they have a magnet.
Yes. So there's this large electromagnet. They come in various sizes, but I guess I would describe it as, oh gosh, in terms of how big they are, maybe 6 by 4 inches or something like that, that we position right next to the head, right next to the left frontal lobe, sort of on the corner of your front head, above your forehead. And that's where we deliver these pulses.
So you own a place called SoCal TMS, and you guys were like the one of the first to get into the TMS business and treating patients regularly. Like, what made you say, "Oh, I want to do this," versus like the traditional psychiatry? Like, how did you find out about it, and like.
Well, I'd been a traditional psychiatrist about 15 years at that point in my career. I had been aware of this research, and I thought that this sounded just kind of amazing, and so followed the research as it came along. And then they finally kind of like worked it out, perfected it to where it was really clinically useful, and they got FDA approval for it at the very end of 2008, and they started selling these machines in 2009. And I said, well, I've got a patient who I've tried everything on, who has not gotten better. And I've literally given them every medicine in the book. And I said, I want to try this and I want to see if it works. This is a woman who'd been an RN. She'd had, lots of suicide attempts, was very, very profoundly depressed, and nothing seemed to pull her out of it. And we started this treatment. So I decided, okay, I'm going to get one of these machines and see what it does. I thought, well, I need to try it out. At the end of the first week, of treatment, she did this load of dirty laundry that had been on the floor for 4 months. Wow. And baked a cake.
Wow.
And she'd actually had a very severe illness. She also had auditory hallucinations. She'd like hear voices telling her bad things. And after a few months, those actually went away.
Were those due to the depression, or is that like a schizophrenia? Like, what was going on with that?
Yeah, usually auditory hallucinations like that are a sign of schizophrenia, but sometimes in a severe depression, you can have them as well.
What? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, sometimes you can have that in a severe depression, or in patients who are bipolar, when they're in one of their highs or lows, can also sometimes have those kinds of symptoms. So it's not always schizophrenia, even though it most commonly is.
Wow.
And
so the voices, yes, went away.
And the depression went away. It really was transformative for her life. And we kept treating her, and she now does what we call maintenance treatment, where she comes in periodically for a single treatment. Mm-hmm. And she's been well for the last 10 years.
Wow. That is amazing. And then kind of in a sense, you kind of got that machine for her, you know?
Yes. And then when I saw how well it worked, I thought, my gosh, I've got to do this. And then it was driven by the fact that patients really wanted something more. What really drove us to keep going with this was that people wanted it. People needed it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of depression's super common. I call it the diabetes of psychiatry. It's the thing that the high blood pressure of psychiatry. It's like, it's so common. It's you antidepressants are some of the biggest selling drugs in the U.S. in terms of like numbers of prescriptions.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they don't work for everybody. If you take a single antidepressant, it works great for about 30% of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then another 40% will tell you, oh yeah, I'm better. I'm definitely better, but I'm not all better. And another 30% will say, this medicine didn't work at all for me. And now you can try other medicines, and you can try combinations of things, and you can bring those numbers up a bit. But there's still a lot of people for whom nothing works, and there's a lot of people for whom it only works kind of so-so.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people come to us and say, you know, I'm on these meds, and on the meds, I can function. I can go to work. I'm not suicidal anymore, but I'm not happy.
Mm.
And this is not a good quality of life, and I want something more. And these people are great candidates for TMS. TMS has fewer side effects than medications do. You're not going to gain weight on it. A lot of antidepressants cause sexual side effects. You lose your sex drive, or cause delayed orgasm. In men and women, people might gain weight on a lot of the drugs we prescribe. So even if medicine works or partly works, you sometimes have to live with those side effects. Now, most patients we treat also will still take medication. I have to mm-hmm. not give this people the idea that this is necessarily going to free them from medication, because usually in the patients we're treating, Depression's been a chronic problem. Depression, either they've had multiple episodes of depression or they've had a kind of a chronic depression that goes on, and maybe it gets better or worse, but never completely goes away. And when you've had depression on that kind of scale, you have to think about a long-term plan for staying well. Even if you get well on medicine, we tend to keep people on medicine. So, but you know, we can with TMS, we can get a significant portion of people completely out of their depression. What we find in practice is about half the patients we treat do really well. Another quarter will get some partial improvement, and another quarter we haven't been able to figure out how to get better yet.
So how is that in comparison to just medication in terms of like the success rate?
Well, you know, it's better than actually an antidepressant medication. It actually has a better success rate than medication does. And now, insurance will cover this treatment commonly if you've failed 2 to 4 medications.
Why
But
is
the
that? Why don't they just, why isn't TMS just an option for people who don't want to take drugs? Because a lot of people, especially in Los Angeles, don't want to put any medications in their body unless they're actual, like, drugs for fun. So, like, what? Why
Well,
is
it could be, and it could be, and it should be, because in terms of safety and side effects, TMS is probably better tolerated than medications. It is more expensive. It takes more time. Taking a pill, you know, a generic prescription can be pretty cheap, and it just takes a minute a day to take your pill. Whereas this treatment's more involved. And so insurance tends to make you try the cheaper treatments first, but they're getting better and better about covering it. I will mention though that if so, I told you like the first medicine you take, you have a 30% chance of it working, of it being a home run, that it, you're gonna feel 100% better. We call that remission. If that doesn't work, if the first medicine doesn't work and you go to the second medicine, it drops down to about 20%. And then the third medicine is even less. And by the time you get to your fourth medicine, the chance that the fourth medicine you try is going to work is now about 7%.
Wow. So why keep putting people through the ringer of doing this?
Well, you know, until now, you didn't have a lot of other options unless you were going to go to something like ECT. And a lot of people are not going to do that. You can't work while you're getting ECT. It can cause this short-term memory loss and confusion. You're going under anesthesia. You can't drive yourself home from the treatments with ECT. And that's one of the beauties about TMS is we have a different modality that works actually better than medicine. And people, our patients go to work and they drive themselves to and from, and they go about their day normally afterwards, and they don't have to make any differences in what they're doing.
Wow.
And it, you know, if you were to compare those people trying their fourth medication to people trying TMS, we have a much better success rate than that fourth medication.
Right. Wow. So you said that typical treatment is 5 days a week for about 25 to 35 minutes. Is there anything in the works, do you think, that making that shorter, like where you could do, like you mentioned, your patient who comes in for maintenance treatments, could anyone do that as like a first option, or is that even heard of?
Well, you know, we do maintenance treatment in patients for whom it demonstrated it worked, and it got them out. So people usually come in usually when their depression's bad, and we get them better. And if we get them better with this, we usually then watch and see how they do, and they might go on and do fine for a while. Unfortunately, depression commonly recurs, so it is not uncommon that we might get someone better and a year later their depression comes back. And we might give them another round of TMS again. We do the treatments 5 days a week for like 6 to 8 weeks. We may taper down the treatments at near the as they improve near the end, so that we don't necessarily treat 5 days a week the whole time.
Okay, is that like a magic number, like the number of treatments that you usually do for a round of TMS?
You know, there is not a magic number, but there has sort of become a magic number. What we have found is that different people actually require different numbers of treatments. However, the original studies that were done to get FDA approval were structured kind of like the way they structured medication studies. And in medication studies, what they do is usually give patients medicine for 6 weeks. And if you can show that it's better than placebo, then the FDA will give you approval. And that's what they did with the TMS studies, is they gave people actually about 6 weeks of treatment. They gave them 30 treatments, 6 days, 5 days a week for 6 weeks. And then a few six tapering treatments, so 36. And insurance companies have got stuck on giving people 36 treatments because that's what was done in a clinical trial. For some people, that's plenty. And for some people, that's not enough. It was enough in the studies to show that it was better than placebo, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the ideal number of treatments. So one of the things we're trying to do with insurance companies is educate them that just like people need a different dose of medication, they may need a different dose of TMS.
Okay. So it's kind of like trial and error in terms of like what is the best fit for like a specific person.
Yeah, people will require differing amounts of treatment. Some people get better faster than others, and some people get better slower than others.
Would this be like a good candidate for? Like, can I go in and just be like, hey, I'd like some TMS treatments? Or like, who do you think this works best for? Does it have to be a chronically depressed patient? Can it be someone grieving? Like, what do you think?
It works well for anyone with depression. You do not have to be a chronic patient, except that your insurance company might say that. Just like they don't give you the brand name drug until you've tried the generic drug first. They may make you jump through some hoops first before they authorize this as a treatment they pay for. However, because it is so safe, because it has so few side effects, there's no reason it couldn't be used first. And an example of a good situation for that might be, say, a pregnant woman who does not want to take medication. And we know that these magnetic pulses are very safe. They don't cause any, the studies that have been done so far look very promising. And the magnetic pulses we're delivering are about the strength of a small MRI machine. They're way beyond your refrigerator magnet in terms of strength. But we understand that MRIs are safe in pregnancy. So that's a perfect situation for someone like this who we could use this first line. It could be used first line. Yeah.
I want to be clear here on this. Could you potentially use one of these magnets to hang things up with? Or
no. So
joking.
Well, okay, so I have to differentiate. So there's your refrigerator magnet is what we call a static magnet. This is an electromagnet that creates a pulse, and it only you only create electrical current when you have a changing magnetic field. And so the magnetic field has to change, and the quicker it changes, the more electricity it generates. And so these magnetic pulses exist for about a thousandth of a second. They go up really fast and they go down really fast, and so they don't persist. They just are there for literally a thousandth of a second, and so they don't attract anything. Things don't go flying across the room and get sucked up by them.
Do people get afraid of that? Do they ask that before they get treated if their jewelry's going to come off or anything?
Yeah, people wonder, is this going to do anything? But the magnetic field we use is very focused. And it exists, like I said, for a very short time. So even if you have a pacemaker, as long as we don't put the magnet right over the pacemaker, you can get this treatment. So you can be in there with your credit cards and your phone, and it's not going to like deprogram anything unless we put the magnet right on top of it.
Well, that's reassuring.
Yeah, so it scares people, but it's actually just a super safe treatment, which is one of the things I really like about it. It's really a super safe, very benign treatment, and yet very powerful at the same time.
Well, I'm really curious about this because I'm like a big self-helpy person, and I only recently learned about TMS, and that it's been around for 10 years. Like, why aren't more people talking about it? Why don't more people know about this other option?
I ask myself that same question because, like I said, depression is like the number one thing that psychiatrists treat. As much as 20% of the population will have depression in their lifetime. It's super common. And this is a really big change. I would say that a lot of this has to do with the companies that developed these technologies were actually very small companies. They do not have a lot of money. They've not had money to put out TV ads like drug companies do. It took years to get insurance companies to come on board and start covering it. So in the beginning, people were paying out of pocket. It really should be more known than it is because it's for what it does and the considering how common and widespread depression is.
Do you think that drug companies don't want this to be out for, you know, that might affect their sales? And
you know, I don't think so. People will still be taking medications. And like I said, even many of our patients will still take some medication because some of the studies have shown actually that after TMS medicine seemed to work better, it somehow seems to help reset things. But it has taken a long time to get the word out. Even psychiatrists have been, cautious about it. And that part of it may also have to do with some of the early tests showed that 15% of patients got better. And, you know, and then we got better at doing it and more patients got better. And then we figured out that you could do more pulses and you could do more power. And we got better about learning exactly how to position the magnets on the head. And so over the years, we've gotten better and better at it. But I think some of the early data had psychiatrists thinking, well, it doesn't really do that much. It isn't really that strong a treatment. But in the last 10 years, we've certainly gotten better and better at it. And one of the exciting things about practicing in this field is that I know we're going to get better at it in another 10 years and we're going to do more things. I mentioned OCD. That was an FDA approval that just came out within about the last year and a half. It requires a different machine that because it targets a different area of the brain, but it helps reduce the obsessions and compulsions that people have. And there's a lot of interest in looking at it to help what's called generalized anxiety disorder, which is basically just common anxiety where people have excessive amounts of worry. There's interest in studying this in PTSD.
Is there any correlation between, you know, this is a creative podcast, you know, a lot of artists listen. So like, what, is there any correlation between TMS and creativity? Can you like hook this up to your brain if you're doing well and then like get superpowers or can it do anything cool like that?
You know, that's an area. The answer is maybe, and there is some interest in that. It's what, you know, what we just call cognitive enhancement. You know, it may not be anything wrong with you, but if you do this, can it somehow improve how well your brain is functioning? The answer to that's maybe, because it's not treatment of disease. There isn't as much research being done in that realm, and some support for paying for it, I guess, as well. But it's an interesting question, because it may be able to do things. It may be able to do some things to make your brain work even better.
Well, that would be amazing. I think that, I mean, especially in LA or in schools, that would be like a really great thing to have.
Yeah. And you know, in a lot of creative people, we see bipolar disorder or manic depression.
What is that?
And what that means is you have periods of time where you have low moods or depressions, and you have periods of time where you have high moods or manias. You know, and it looks pretty clear that, like, Van Gogh had this, and he had periods in time in his life where he painted everything brown and drab, and then periods in his time in his life where the sky was on fire, you know, and then of course he died of suicide. But a lot of creative people have those kind of tendencies. TMS seems to be really good at helping the low sides that people go into in bipolar disorder, even though the FDA indication isn't specifically for bipolar lows. It's more for what we call unipolar lows. Mm-hmm. It does work well for that, and that may be one of the FDA approvals that we see coming on for this in the future. In my own experience in treating it, I find that it works quite well. You just have to make sure that it doesn't push you up into a high, because it can take you from a low into a high.
Like over, kind of cause some mania or something?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, when that happens, we just stop the treatment and things tend to settle right back down. So it's usually well managed. We usually catch it early because the patient's coming in every day for their treatment. So it's usually not problematic.
And see like how they're behaving, if there's like any big changes in them or anything like that.
Yes.
Right. What was I going to ask you here? I saw something about personal use machines for, like, it's not TMS, but it's something to do with magnets. Have you heard about these at all? Like,
so there are some various devices that are available. That you can use at home. There's a thing called TDCS, which is transcranial direct current stimulation. And it basically runs off a AA battery, and you put these electrodes on your head. Now, I'm not a big fan of these, and I'll tell you why. When you, with a AA battery, and you put these electrodes on your head, most of the current goes from one electrode to the other through your skin. Electricity doesn't go really well through bone, and it usually just goes right around your brain and doesn't actually get in your brain. And it sounds like a great idea, but you can't actually fire your brain with a AA battery. To really fire your brain, you have to do ECT. Now, there may be some tendency that you can get some very slight effect by maybe changing a little bit of the polarity in your brain, but the evidence for these devices aren't that good. They're sold, and one of the reasons you see them sold, though, is because these devices were on the market before the FDA regulated them. And when the FDA decided to start regulating these types of devices, they weren't going to take them off the market, and they weren't going to make these people go back and do multi-million dollar studies to prove they worked. So they just grandfathered them in and just sort of said, okay, they're there. We're just going to accept the fact that they're there.
But they don't really do much.
No. Unfortunately, yeah, a lot of these take home things don't really do that much. No, the effects are weak.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you just a personal, not like an anecdote. What is it? Yeah. about your experience with TMS so far. Like, what's the craziest or like kind of most extreme thing you've seen with this type of therapy that you can think of? I know it's kind of putting you on the spot, but I just thought about that.
Well, the most extreme thing. Well, okay, we don't get everybody better, but sometimes we get people who just will tell us that their life has been turned around. It's you know, I have patients who'll tell me, this is the best I've felt in a long time. I go, how long? And they say, well, maybe since I was 18.
Wow.
Because I've been dealing with depression for the last 20 years. You know, and that's actually, you know, that's actually pretty crazy and remarkable. It may not be far out, and it may not, but the ability that we can put a magnet on your head. We're not actually putting anything inside your body,
right?
Except for magnetic energy, and yet we can change your brain in a way that makes you that much better that itself is really exciting.
Yeah, it's really cool. That's why I'm so like shocked that more people don't know about this and it's not that common.
Well, I'm glad that you're helping spread the word, because people do need to know about it. I mean, suicide is still a major cause of death in the United States. That's mm-hmm. very preventable and very treatable. And we need to do more to treat these types of mental health problems.
So you said that depression is like the kind of like the most common psychiatric problem. It's like the high blood pressure of it. Like, why do you think that is? Why is depression so common?
Well, that's a really good question. And is depression more common in modern existence? And is it more common in industrialized countries? Or are we just diagnosing it more? You know, it's interesting. You do tend to see depression more in Western societies. But depression does go all the way back to the ancient Greeks. The Greeks used to call it melancholia. And melanin is black, and cholia means bile. And they thought that you had depression because you had too much black bile inside your body.
Oh, wow.
And so the ancient Greeks had this biological explanation for depression back millennia ago. So it does appear to have been around. I do think we maybe diagnose it more, but I also think there is something about modern life that does make it more common than what you might have seen in the past. Now, I've talked to a lot of patients who will describe, you know, one of their parents, maybe their mother, their father, who wouldn't get out of bed for long periods of time, would be sort of absent and aloof and not very responsive to them. And never got any treatment. And that parent was probably suffering from depression, you know, and a lot of times people just kind of like suffered through it.
Yeah. I have a personal experience with that. I remember like my grandma, like she was just always in her room all the time. And I didn't think anything of it. I'm like, she just hangs out in her room a lot. That's just who she is. But now looking back at it as an adult, I'm like, oh, something's going on there. And
yeah,
it wasn't obvious before.
Right. And there wasn't a word for it. And there wasn't, people didn't talk about it. And there wasn't Prozac to give them anyhow, in a lot of situations. So, or the meds that they have weren't as easy to take. So now that we have more tools, it's more important to identify it, label it, and try to help it.
What's a sign that someone could be depressed that they may not realize it is depression.
Okay. Well, you know, I actually like the old Greek term melancholia, because when you say depression, everyone says, well, I know what it's like to be depressed. I got a parking ticket the other day and I was so depressed. And I didn't get anything back on my taxes this year. And that isn't what depression is. Depression isn't just sadness. There's much more to depression. Now, part of it's sadness, and part of it is an inability to experience pleasure. Mm-hmm. You know, I once had a patient tell me, you know, winning the lottery wouldn't help.
Wow.
Or a guy who said, I took my kids to Disneyland and I couldn't have fun. I couldn't enjoy any of it. You know, or the things that you normally like to do just don't feel good anymore. Nothing tastes good. You've no desire for anything, no interest in anything, no sexual interest. So that's one thing. It's not just being sad. It's inability to experience pleasure.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of Pirates of the Caribbean, when the pirates got cursed and they couldn't, you know, get satiated. They couldn't, nothing pleased them. It was so it was depression. So that's
interesting. And then there's some physical signs. Almost all patients with depression will have some sort of sleep trouble. And it's either they have insomnia or they're sleeping too much. And they almost all have, so it's extremely common to have fatigue. It's real common that someone's sleeping 12 hours and they get up and they're tired.
Yeah.
And even though you've been sleeping 12 hours, you must be well rested. No, because we actually know that in depression, your sleep architecture changes. You get much more light sleep and much less deep sleep. Mm-hmm. And you don't get the restorative kind of sleep that you need. And so you can sleep for 12 hours and be tired all day long. And then one of the things that comes with that is you lose focus and concentration. And it's hard to pick up a book and read a page without having to go back and reread because you don't remember what you just read. And this affects people's ability to work. There's a lot of what we call presenteeism as opposed to absenteeism at work due to depression, where people show up at work, but they just kind of shuffle the papers across their desk and they don't actually get anything done. Mm-hmm. You might lose appetite. Sometimes people lose appetite. Some people eat too much. Sometimes people lose weight. There's some of these physical kinds of signs that you can have that go beyond just, oh, I'm sad. Mm-hmm. And if you've had depression, you know the difference between, oh, I'm having a bad day and I'm depressed versus I have clinical depression. And that's why it's like saying, everybody's had a cough, but not everyone's had pneumonia. And yet it's like calling pneumonia bad cough. It's more than just depression. It's this whole constellation of things that include being commonly sleep, energy, concentration, drive and motivation, irritability, people lose their patience. One guy told me, you know, doc, this morning when I was getting to you to come to my appointment, my battery was dead. And before I would have probably broken the car window, and today I called AAA.
Wow.
You know, it was a bummer. I wasn't happy with it, but I didn't overreact and I dealt with it and I moved on. Whereas when you're depressed, something like that can happen and it can ruin your whole day and you can't get past it and sing songs and do things, you know. Sometimes patients will say, I know I'm better because I wanted to turn the radio, my car radio on again and listen to the music. And before I had no interest in it at all. It didn't sound good to me anymore.
Wow. It's so amazing though, those little things that we don't think about that could be going on that are connected.
Right. And then and being grouchy and not wanting to turn the car radio on, you may not think that there's something wrong with you, but those are all can all be indicators of depression and that your brain isn't working right. And there's ways to fix that.
So what should someone do? Well, before I ask you that, I want to, like, in your personal opinion, have you seen any trends in depression, like any increase? Like, it seems like the world's getting crazier and crazier. Have you noticed anything personally with your practice of like an uptick of depression?
Well, you know, currently we're people are under a lot of stress with, you know, right now we're under quarantine and pandemic and home isolation, and people are losing their social contacts, and people are facing economic uncertainty, and there's a lot of stress. And when there's more stress, people that can take you from being on the edge of depression to being in it with both feet. And you know, like I say, I talk a lot about how there's biological aspects of depression, but what's going on in your life and in your world and how you cope with it do make a difference. So that's one thing. Fortunately, people are talking about depression more and more, but still not enough. It's still hard for a lot of people to recognize in themselves when they're actually suffering and when they should reach out and get some help.
What is a good sign? Like, who should they contact? Like, what do they do? And they're like, oh man, I have all those symptoms he was just talking about. I thought I was just, you know, having a bad week or year. Like, what do you think the first step is?
Well, you know, seeing a psychiatrist is great, but that's not often the people's first step. I have to tell you, most antidepressant prescriptions are written by your family doctor. There just aren't enough psychiatrists in the world to treat all the depression that's out there. Getting therapy, I haven't talked about that at all, but getting therapy can be very helpful. It may not be enough for every level of depression, but it can, I'm a big fan of it. And seeing a therapist can be a good place to start. And then if your therapist may say, hey, look, this is of a level where I think you should look into other treatments and getting some medicine, and then they may be able to refer you on or to either talk to your primary care doctor or see a psychiatrist. And then if those things don't work, then we have things like TMS that, you know, we can also go to.
Do you have a type of therapy that you like the most, like, you know, cognitive behavioral versus, you know, and psychoanalytical? Like, what do you think works best with something like depression?
You know, if you look at like the research, it tells you that cognitive behavioral therapy has been really shown to work well. It partly is because just a lot of research has been done with cognitive behavioral therapy because it's very easy to standardize. There's like a manual for it. You can get 10 therapists to do the same thing, and you could actually kind of compare and do a study. In real practice, I'm very eclectic in the kind of therapy that I do with patients. I draw a little bit on this and a little bit on that. So I use some, there's things to benefit from psychoanalytic thinking, and there's things to benefit from cognitive behavioral, and you can bring it all together. And I think actually a lot of therapists in practice will pull a lot from different schools of thought, depending on the patient that they're dealing with.
It's funny you say that. I read one of your Yelp reviews, and it said, like, you're an artist with your prescribing, and it's like you're an artist with how you approach psychiatry. So you've got some fans out there in terms of your approach.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, I do think you have to listen to the patient and see where they're at and do what's best for them. I have issue with people who I say have the Lowry's point of view, where, you know, everybody's getting prime rib because that's what we're serving tonight. Mm. You know, not everybody Not everybody wants or needs prime rib. You know, you have to figure out different things require different approaches.
Yeah, some people are vegan. You know, they can't have prime
rib. Right.
So you own you're the chief medical director of SoCal TMS, which is like one of the biggest, I think maybe the biggest TMS treatment places in the country.
One of the biggest in the country, and certainly the biggest in the Southern California area right now.
Yeah. So say someone wants to try TMS, like what's the first thing that they should do to work with you or get some
You give us a call. And one of our intake people will actually sit down with you and talk to you and get your story. We do a free consultation to see if TMS seems right for you. And then if it does seem right, we can help get insurance authorization for your treatment. We would have you then talk to one of our doctors before you actually do your treatment, and you know, do a thorough evaluation, prep you, and help you understand what to expect. But the first steps are easy. You can just call us and come in and talk to us, and we will do a free consultation with you to find out if you're a candidate.
Okay. Is there anything that would disqualify someone for being eligible to do TMS?
You know, there's one thing, and that's if you have some kind of metal in your head that's magnetic.
Oh.
Which is very rare. It's kind of like if you have like bullet fragments or things like that. Surgical things are not, nowadays we don't use magnetic metals. Not every metal is magnetic. So not every metal trips off the metal detector, and things like titanium, they use in like surgical implants because they're not magnetic, and you can still get an MRI with one of those things inside your body. All dental work is not magnetic. All modern dental work is not magnetic.
So someone can have a dental implant that has some sort of metal in it and still be able to get TMS.
Yeah, absolutely. So okay. There's almost nobody who, you know, it's very rare that someone's actually ineligible for the treatment for some reason like that.
Okay. So your company helps people get the insurance? Because I think people get so confused when it comes to like what their insurance will and won't cover. You guys help facilitate that?
Yes. So just about every major insurance carrier covers TMS. So, you know, Anthem Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Cigna, Aetna. And we're in network with all the ones I just mentioned. We also do most of Kaiser's treatment in the Los Angeles area that they send to us. So all of those coverages work well. Medi-Cal does not cover TMS. Medicare effectively does not. Technically they do, but they pay so little, they pay less than the cost of delivering the treatment, that I don't know anyone in this area, the only area, who actually accepts Medicare. So even UCLA stopped taking it because they weren't getting reimbursed enough. So that's a problem. So effectively it's not covered by Medicare, even though technically it is. That's something that we're really trying to work on to try to get them to change.
And there are out-of-pocket options too. Like if someone.
Yes. Yes. There's always out-of-pocket options. It's not inexpensive. But some people do that. So most people though with major commercial insurance, like I know that Anthem Blue Cross is mm-hmm. big and Aetna, they require that you've tried two antidepressants before you are eligible for TMS treatment.
Okay. And is that over time just in general or like?
technically they say the current episode of the illness, but some people have had chronic depression that's gone on for a while. And so the episode of the illness can be quite a long period of time. So in practice, they normally will look at your whole medication history. And if there's been two that you've tried sort of ever, they'll accept that.
Okay. Well, I'm a comedian, so I know a lot of depressed people who have tried a lot of different medications, and I'm definitely going to tell them about this. So,
well, you know, there's that old stereotype of the depressed comedians, you know, and I've seen a few of those in my day. But
why do you think that is? Why do you think comedians are so depressed?
Well, I think maybe depressed people try to go into comedy. not that doing comedy makes you depressed, but maybe depressed people are trying to feel better.
What is that about? Everyone says like there's that, you know, like with that famous clown that goes to see a doctor, and the doctor says, he says, "Oh, I'm sad." He goes, "Go see this clown," and he's like, "I am the clown." I don't. For a comedian, I'm not good at regurgitating jokes.
Well, you know, I think that is a stereotype. And I have to tell you that you see depression in all walks of life. In all different types of people from all different professions. So that's probably just a stereotype that doesn't really hold up, because you certainly can find it in anybody. Nothing makes you immune from depression.
So you don't have like a population that you see most, and it's just kind of all over the place, or is there some like a population that you tend to see more of?
Well, it is kind of all over the place. Now, in general, more women have depression than men. That said, I mean, I think part of it is women, I think, tend to internalize more, and men tend to externalize. So I sometimes say, you know, there's more women with depression, but there's more men in jail.
But guys don't like to get help, though. Every guy I've dated that I'm like, let's get therapy or get therapy, he's like, no. So there's like this big stigma with that.
Well, you know, an interesting thing too is that more men die of suicide than women.
Wow.
3 times more.
Wow, that's a lot.
A lot more. A lot of that has to do with they're more likely to actually choose a violent means, because actually women make more suicide attempts than men, but men tend to use guns more often, which are almost always effective. And
And I don't know how I feel about that. Like, part of me is like, women can do it too, but then also I'm like, well, this is really sad. I shouldn't be.
Yeah, you know, that isn't something that you need to be proud. That's not something to do. That's something you don't need to be aspiring to.
No, of course not. It's my sense of humor is getting away from me. So
because you know, a lot of times when people survive a suicide attempt, they're later glad they did, but at the time, you don't see that option, and that's part of what happens in suicide is you, it seems like there is no option, and this seems like it's the only way out, and yet, there are options, and there are ways to feel better, and there are ways to get past it, and if you stick with it long enough, you can get there.
Okay, well, TMS sounds like a really great start. Is there a number or a website that we can have to reach out to SoCal in case someone's interested? And
yes, SoCalTMS.com, SoCalTMS.com, SoCalTMS, and our 800 number is 866-322-7776, 866-322-7776. But go to SoCal TMS, read about it, hear about it, get more of your questions answered, and then call. We'll talk.
Okay.
Yeah.
And fun fact, you were on The Doctors, right? And Dr. Oz and all that.
I was on the, Yes, I was on the doctors. We did a case of a guy we treated who had depression, and we actually used TMS to treat pain. I hadn't even talked about that
Oh, no.
treatment of chronic pain with TMS. But there's a lot of things that may be still coming with this treatment, that ways that we can utilize it. And one of the ones I'm really excited about is treatment of chronic pain. We don't have coverage for that with insurance yet or FDA approval, but this is one of the exciting things about the future of it.
Oh, wow. So it sounds like that might be coming down the pipeline with other things as well,
Yes,
with
I think so.
OCD and anxiety,
Yes.
depression.
Yes.
That's great. That's really great news. Well, I'm gonna head out here and not take up too much more of your
Well, thank
time.
you, Christine. It's been great. It's been fun.
Great. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this. This is a big get for the podcast, and I'm really. I just want to say it's really great what you're doing, and I just want to get the word out more. And thank
Oh,
you.
the pleasure's mine. Thank you.
All right.